fourth case of the morning, which is Henderson versus Ball State University.
Yes, Your Honor. Please record, my name is Thomas Margolis. I represent the appellant in this matter, Melissa Henderson. I am going to request, I have requested that the court reverse and remand the summary judgment heretofore granted by the district court in this Title IX matter. Title IX is essentially controlled by the Gebster case. In this situation, factually, we had a point where we had the student's professor who developed some sort of obsession with a student and thereafter made anonymous gestures. They became open and obvious after the classes ended, and there were a series of communications.
Margolis, I want to start at the end, though. This is a Title IX case. It is governed by the standards of that case.
Yes.
Even if you had succeeded in showing that there was a genuine issue of fact on whether what he was doing amounted to severe or pervasive harassment, it's hard for me to see what else Ball State could have done. The steps, at a pragmatic level, the steps they take, number one, succeed in bringing it to an end rather quickly, maybe not instantaneously, but rather quickly. And there's no further consequence. They do, in effect, reprimand him, and I'm not aware of anything in the law that says the only step that will be regarded as a matter of law as a reasonable step is to fire a person. So even if you're right, you know, that he continues teaching, even if all of these other things are there, Ball State responds quickly, seriously, and with measures that have the desired effect.
With all due respect, Your Honor, I disagree with that. What happened here is that...
Well, look, he stops going by the apartment, right? He's thrown out of university housing, so he doesn't live there anymore. He stops the letters, he stops the flowers, right?
He stopped any contact after the Ball State police were called and they went to the scene.
Why isn't that something the university can do? They call the police, he comes to the scene, he finally realizes, oops, I better stop this, so he stops.
Because the faculty policy of Ball State University provides that they define sexual harassment. And what Dr. Kozlov did in this matter fell within those parameters. Ball State imposed no sanction of any kind or weight or anything in this matter.
But
he got no counseling.
He did things that made him stop. I mean, I guess that's your real complaint seems to be they didn't punish him enough, given the university's policy. And I don't see how that works in light of the standard that the Supreme Court has set out for Title IX, if they've done effective things.
Title IX provides, and it addresses the issue of the hostile educational environment. Dr. Kozlov taught in the computer science department, and Melissa Henderson was a student in that department. She had the situation where she had to potentially deal with him in the course of seeing him and or taking a class from him. And I would respectfully submit to the court that university housing did not immediately throw him out of the housing. They let his lease expire, which was on June 30th of that year. They let him linger then and there. There was an affidavit before this court where witnesses saw him looking. Simply by doing that, they did not cure the problem. Davis said that Title IX, it does not deal with the conduct necessarily. It deals with how they deal with how the university in this case deals with it. My point in this whole proceeding has been that the severity was subjective, and that Ball State was clearly unreasonable. If Ball State would have, as per the faculty policy, said, Dr. Kozloff, you go to sensitivity counseling on sexual harassment. You do something. Put in a reprimand. Subsequent to this, he got more money from the university. The university said he was fired. Yes, his name appeared on the fall schedule, and
on the what?
On the fall schedule.
The fall schedule.
Schedule.
Was he teaching the fall?
Yes. His name was on the schedule, and I am informed that he did teach, but the university said in a letter signed by the president of the university that Dr. Kozloff would be terminated from the university. Dr. Kozloff faced no sanction at all in any way, shape, manner, or form from this university. The worst he got from the affirmative action office was that they said if there are any further problems, You will be fired. You will do something. The university didn't do anything. The point here is that if the university would have done something, and the problem is it changed the environment for Melissa Hendrickson, where her bottom line was she whatever academic benefits she had from being on that university, that changed. Everywhere she looked, she went around the corner. Going to that department was a significant problem for her. And Dr. Kozloff was still there. And the problem...
Wait. When she originally was getting the flowers and all this stuff, she was kind of curious as who this was.
Yes, she thought it was another student.
And if it turned out to be another professor, if she would have had some interest in this guy, there wouldn't have been a problem.
No, she told him no.
Right, but if had she had chemistry or whatever it is with this fellow, then there would have been no problem. What happened was, once she found out who it was, she didn't care for it. She told him so. What was the worst thing he did after that?
He was lurking in between buildings. He was stalking her.
You think the evidence here suggests that he was stalking her?
There is an affidavit.
Where is the evidence that he was stalking?
There is.
He lived in the same vicinity, so.
There's an affidavit where a neighbor saw him lurking through the building. I concede he did live at the same complex, and the university let him. But if he is living at that complex, and if he's going about his business, you don't lurk, and you don't stare.
What does lurking mean? I think it's all very vague as to what the worst thing is that he did after she decided that she didn't want to get interested in him.
Dr. Kozloff withheld his identity, and then after his identity was brought out by her efforts to do so, at that point, Dr. Kozloff he didn't stop until the police were called. And with all due respect to the court, Title IX, it goes to the existence of a hostile educational environment. What happened? This altered this educational environment for Melissa Hendrickson. Ball State could have done something. They didn't do anything except say, Dr. Kozloff, if there's a problem in the future, then we may do something.
I'm sure in firing, from your view, there's really nothing they could have done. He's lurking, meaning whatever that means, but he's still in the same apartment at least till the end of June. Apparently he's still on the faculty or has some teaching assignment. So when she goes to that department, he might be around. So if he never said it or looked at her thing again, in your view, unless he's just out of there, there's no...
No, with all due respect, John, the faculty personnel policy, it provides 10 possible sanctions to be imposed. One would have been to put something in his personnel file, which was a written reprimand.
Right, one of them. You would have known that.
But it doesn't matter.
He's still around. He's still bothering her. He's still whatever this.
But the fact is that this university didn't do anything. They did nothing to protect this student.
How does this, something in his file protect him?
The point is, based on the Davis case, it created a hostile educational environment for her. And at no point did Ball State or any person with Ball State say, we have done this, that, or the other. They didn't even talk to the witnesses to establish the gravity of the harm and the harm that she felt. They didn't do anything. All they did was say, if it happens again, you've got a problem. But at this point, you don't. I will.
All right. Thanks. Mr. Shockley?
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Scott Shockley. I appear on behalf of the defendant below and the appellee here, Ball State University. This case arose under Title IX, and Judge Barker, in her decision, identified two issues that she found on behalf of Ball State as to both issues. The first issue was whether or not the university's response to the plaintiff's complaint demonstrated or exhibited extreme indifference or criminal recklessness, as this court has interpreted that term, for the basis for liability under Title IX to require. She concluded that the university's response was appropriate, was adequate, and did not demonstrate that level of conduct to create liability.
Can I just ask you a technical question?
Sure.
The original complaint also mentioned Does 1 through 10, and I wanted to know whether is there an official order of the court disposing of that aspect of the case in some fashion or another?
I don't believe the judgment, I'm certain the judgment does not address that. During the proceedings, Ms. Hendrickson never identified who those parties were.
There was never any service.
But there certainly
would
be no service on them. So
correct.
We ought to take the position at that point that they, in fact, never really became parties and thus there's nothing about them?
That would be appropriate.
Okay.
They were identified just as does in the complaint, and that was it. Nothing else ever occurred. The other issue before Judge Barker that she also decided in favor of the university was whether or not the conduct of Dr. Kozlov would satisfy the level of severe and pervasive or objectively offensive conduct that would constitute sexual harassment under governing law, typically borrowed from Title VII for analysis in the Title IX context. And in that respect, she also concluded that the conduct of Dr. Kozlov, however awkward, did not rise to that level.
Severe or pervasive, so I presume she was saying it was neither severe enough standing alone, nor was there enough of it, as it were, pervasive enough.
Yes, Judge Wood. I think in Judge Barker's opinion at page 11, she characterizes these as relatively isolated, non-severe incidents. And in fact, if we, and I realize that one incident alone can satisfy that standard for Title VII liability for sexual harassment, so I don't mean to suggest that the fact that these occurred in a relatively short time frame in and of itself is dispositive of that issue, but they did. They occurred over the space of maybe 10 days in late April and early May. So if pervasive is viewed in that respect, they weren't pervasive. And as far as severity goes, if you look at the cases from this circuit with respect to what constitutes severe conduct or misconduct in a sexual harassment context, what Dr. Kozlov did just doesn't rise to that level.
How much is there in this record about his, not only his behavior, but I guess his role at Ball State University after the resolution of the EOAA complaint and the decisions to, you know, essentially to not to renew his university housing and to alert him to the fact that harassment was impossible, you know, it was wrong and he couldn't retaliate and things had happened. There is this one document that indicates he was scheduled to teach during the next semester. Is there anything else in the record?
I don't believe so. Mr. Margolis raised that in his argument, and let me explain what happened with respect to Dr. Kozlov. I don't want to the argument of my opponent to suggest the his client was offered the termination of Dr. Kozlov as some remedial measure, because that was not correct. What happened with him, he was tenure-track faculty in computer science. He was determined by the promotion and tenure committee in his department to not be making satisfactory progress toward tenure. So he was given a, under the requirements of the university, if you're tenure-track and that determination is made, you get a year's notice before your termination is effective. So he was given that letter and told, at the expiration of your year, you won't return to the department.
That's the letter that we have in the
I believe that is the letter.
Yeah.
It probably doesn't recite all that, but that that goes up through the administrative hierarchy and then comes from the president. While he was on his terminal year, it was determined that the departmental faculty was understaffed, and simply they needed him to return for another year, not to return him back to tenure track, but they needed him to return for another year, so he was given another year's contract, and he did remain on the faculty, but he no longer does. He's returned to Russia, but as far as we know. I think his visa just permitted him to come to the United States to teach at Ball State.
What if any, policy does Ball State have on faculty dating students?
Good question, and the subject of much debate. With respect to relationships where the professor occupies a teaching position toward the student, there is a policy that...
here he gave her a pretty good grade, gave her an A grade and told her she didn't have to worry much about a fine exam. Right?
That's correct.
That might have been a complaint other students could have had about that. But is there a policy that says that these are all adults, that he couldn't fall in love with the student, she couldn't reciprocate?
The policy only at least discourages, if not prohibits, dating relationships when the student and the professor, when the student is a student of the professor in a class, out of a concern for exploitation and that power relationship. But more broadly in the university, there is no prohibition. It's discouraged. But there is
That's
no.
That's very common, actually, in university sexual harassment policies, given the fact that there could be future student-teacher relationships between two people, especially for graduate students. So maybe it's a very common policy you have.
Yeah, it's been the subject of much debate in the university. Obviously, a lot of different points of view. And maybe not surprisingly, one of the entities that has to speak on this subject is the Faculty Senate, and they seem unwilling to adopt more stringent restrictions.
Well, because in the real world, professors and students get together occasionally, don't they?
They do, and sometimes I end up here when they do.
I hope sometimes you don't end up here when they do.
I hope, and I think most of the time we don't end up here, but... we believe the university responded promptly, effectively, as the court has already pointed out in its questions. After the intervention, after the complaint was made, within the space of less than a week, Ms. Hendrickson was interviewed, then Dr. Kozlov was interviewed. 5 days later, he was orally told, leave her alone, don't bother her, your conduct's unwelcome. 3 days later, that was followed with written findings which reaffirmed that. And really, from the first day or two, when he got the no trespass order from University Housing, his contact with her ceased. And there was no further complaints by her, and she acknowledged in her deposition that there was nothing further that he did that offended her. So we think that the university's response was prompt, it was thorough, it was effective. I think it met the standard of the Gebzer case. We think that Judge Barker's decision upholding the university's conduct as consistent with its requirements under Title IX was correct. We also think she was correct when she concluded that this conduct, although perhaps inappropriate, I think was her phrase, did not rise to the level of severe and pervasive harassment that would support liability under either Title VII or Title IX. And for those reasons, we'd ask this court to affirm her judgment. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Your time has actually expired. Do you have something you really have to say? I'll give you 30 seconds. Make it quick.
Mm-hmm. If it pleases the court, based on the exhibit before this court, Dr. Kozlov was a non-tenured faculty professor. Further, that the problem was, is, and will be, this created a hostile educational environment for Melissa Hendrickson, and Ball State did nothing to assuage her feelings and or regard with regard to that. Thank you.
All right, thanks very much. This case will be taken under advisement.